This is a classic gospel, one that is very much one of my favorite gospels for many reasons. But what I'd like to do this morning is to first mention the obvious lesson, but then to go a little bit underneath the obvious lesson. Because I think it deserves going a little deeper. And what's the obvious lesson? The obvious lesson is that Martha is busy. So busy that she doesn't take time to do what the object of the visit was. Think about it. How many times has this happened? It's happened to me a lot. Where you go over to someone's house for dinner and you hardly see them because they're in the kitchen. Okay? What did you go there for? Look, I can get a very decent meal in a nice restaurant. I went there to visit with the people. I didn't go there so that one of the couple or the person should be absent and not engaging in the purpose for which I was there. Now, it's interesting because Martha goes up to Jesus and she thinks she's in the right, and superficially she is. And notice what she says to Jesus. I love it because I hear this all the time. Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me alone to do the serving? I can't tell you how many times I have parishioners come up to me complaining, Father, do you not care that XYZ is happening? And periodically, I really am tempted to say, no, I don't care. Because there are things that are just, there's things that are just not worth caring about. Right? It's like any of you who are parents know that if you're going to go out and start disciplining every tiny little thing that your kids do wrong, it's going to be miserable. And so you look for what's important. But Martha goes, do you not care? Now, we would probably have, had we not heard Jesus' answer, we would probably turn to Mary and say, now, Mary, you know, you really should be more generous and you should help your sister. And when you go to confession, make sure that you confess that you were insensitive to your sister and you didn't help her with the household chores. Sounds about right. Except that Jesus comes out and says, Martha, you are anxious and upset about many things. Now notice, he's not criticizing her for the work she's doing. He's criticizing her for putting the work she's doing out of context. And out of context, making it more important than listening to him. We've all got to eat. Somebody's got to prepare the food. But when it comes to things that are important, Martha has got it upside down. And so Jesus says, Mary has chosen the better part, and she shall not be deprived of it. Now, here's where I'd like to go a little bit deeper. Because this is not an issue of good and evil. It's not. Martha's doing housework. That's not evil. So it's not that Mary is choosing the good and Martha is choosing the evil. It's that, and Jesus really doesn't get on Martha. He just says that Mary has chosen the better part. Now, when you say something is better, you're not saying that the other choice is wrong. It is just not better than the other one. And so this raises a very interesting dilemma. And it's a dilemma that only human beings have to deal with. Notice, when you treat any animal, and I'm always very conscious of the fact that I am an animal, okay? It's not derogatory. I firmly believe that in some way or another, and we don't know how, that God took animals, whatever those animals were, and I'm not saying they're monkeys or anything like that, but that God took the basic stock of animals, because we have way too much in common. You know, we eat, we drink, we get tired, we sleep, but we go to the bathroom. Exactly the same thing as animals. But then that God somehow took some animals in what way? Adam and Eve is a story that refers you to the fact that God took animals and basically upgraded them and made them in his image and likeness. Now it says in created man out of the soil. It's basically the same thing, out of pre-existing creation. And so notice that any animal, a dog or a cat, does a dog or a cat have to decide between good and evil? No. There is no such moral quandary for any animal. Right? They don't deal with that. They don't even deal with, should I choose this or this when two of them are good? Because that's the situation that Martha finds herself in. She finds herself in front of two equal goods. Not equal, but two goods. Cooking and listening to the Lord. Neither of them is wrong. However, for a human being, there is one that evidently is better than another. And that's the dilemma that human beings find themselves, we find ourselves in. That there are a lot of choices in our lives that are not necessarily between good and evil, that are between greater and lesser goods. And what you have to ultimately figure out is which you should choose. Which you should choose, and in which situation should you choose that? Because notice, if both Martha and Mary spent all of their time listening to the Lord and just followed him around, and they never worked and nobody ever cooked, that would not be a very good thing. And so the issue here is not that Mary should never help Martha cook. It's the context. It's choosing at this particular moment, this happens to be better than this. Now notice how complicated this is getting. Because not only are you having to choose the difference between two actions, you're having to take into account the circumstances and the timing to make sure that you choose the appropriate better action in that circumstance. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because a long time before Jesus, the philosopher Socrates said one of his great famous sentences. He wrote many famous sentences. Okay? This famous sentence is, "The unexamined life is not worth living." The unexamined life is not worth living. Now, please understand, I don't think that Socrates was saying that if you live an unexamined life that you should kill yourself. That's not the point. The point is, it's not worth living means it's wasted. You're wasting your life. And why are you wasting your life if it's unexamined? Because you're making decisions without finding out which is worthwhile. Which decision is better and which decision is worse or less than better. And so the very first thing that a human being has to do is, philosophers have called it different things, but I like the word intentional living. That means not living in a default environment in your life. Now, let me tell you what I mean by default. There are a lot of people, and Socrates would say this is an unexamined life. There are a lot of people who, instead of intentionally choosing and making distinctions, what we do is we live in a reactive manner. We react rather than act. I mean, the example that I like the best makes most sense to me. If you've ever played pool, you know that the opening shot in pool is called the break. And when you shoot the break, if it's your turn to shoot the break, I would ask you to reflect in your mind, what direction does each of the balls go in? I want you to imagine that each of the balls are an individual human being. What is determining where each individual ball goes as a result of the break? And the answer is, well, the individual balls in the break ultimately end up wherever the most recent collision with another ball takes them. And so, you know, the four ball may collide with another ball, and then it goes in this direction, then it collides with another ball, and then in this it collides with another ball, and you hearing the tack, 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 tack of balls colliding, and all each ball ending up where it didn't even intend to go, just as a reaction of where it was sent by the latest collision. Now, I submit to you that a lot of people live their lives like that. There's no sense of direction. There's a sense of reaction, a sense of doing whatever. That's why whenever I hear people say, "Oh, whatever," that always gets to me, because what I'm hearing is a lack of desire to think through an issue that deserves greater pondering. It's actually a manifestation of intellectual laziness, where a person does not want to spend the time thinking. Now, there are moments in which you have to decide what you're going to spend your energy on rather than not. But that's precisely the point. Sometimes we take what is urgent, but not very important. There's this method of that you have urgent but important, urgent but not important, not urgent but not important, and not urgent but important. And you can put tasks in each of those squares. I think a lot of us react to urgency and don't look enough at importance. And that's the problem with Martha. She is experiencing the urgency of something, but she is, and Jesus is saying, you are reacting urgently at the urgent, but not important. Mary is reacting to the important and not urgent in her. Now, you may disagree. And so, what is the difference, and how do you get to the, how do you start examining your life so that you are making a decision to, on the whole, now granted, you're never going to be able to do this with every little piece of your life, but on the whole, to do enough reflection to where instead of acting like a pool ball, allowing yourself to sort of live in a reactionary manner, that you begin to make conscious decisions about what is a priority in your life and in which way you should move. Now, just an aside here, I always find it extremely interesting and meaningful you all know that I love etymologies. That's one of the things that I find very helpful. And I've mentioned before that the word worship, we come to Sunday, this is Sunday worship, right? You're here to worship God. But if you look at the word worship, it's exactly what I'm talking about. You see, Mary was worshiping Jesus. Martha was worshiping, but not in the way she should. Why does the word worship apply here? Because the word worship comes from two simple words. Well, one ending, the suffix, and the first part. The suffix is ship. Ship. So that you can have like, and ship means the art or the purpose of something. Like, for example, penmanship, craftsmanship, okay, workmanship, okay. So you have all of these ship. When you add ship, it means the art and practice of something. Now, we have the W-O-R. All you have to add to the W-O-R to find out where it comes from is put a T-H after it. So you have worth. And so the actual word worship means worth-ship. What does worth-ship mean? The art and practice of choosing what is worthwhile and putting it in correct order. That is worth-ship. So when you come to church, the ultimate priority here is, you know, we think of worship sometimes as standing in front of a God going, That's not worship. Worship is actively using the time to say, I know that my relationship with God is number one. I trust that. How is the rest of the things that I find worthwhile stack up? And is that really first? And I need to examine my life to see if God is really worthwhile. Now apply that to Mary and Martha. Why does Jesus say Mary has chosen the better part? Because she's doing, she's got the right hierarchy. Preparing food is a good, but first is listening to God. That's the better good. Okay? And so when Socrates says the unexamined life is not worth living, it is a life without worship. A life that either worships superficially or a life that does not integrate worship into its reality of choosing the things that you're going to spend your time in. And so, in order to choose correctly and wisely, you have to examine. That's why Socrates says the unexamined life. When you're going to examine something, what you have to do is study it. Make sure that what you are choosing is truly the good that is the best good rather than the lesser good. Because using the lesser good all the time will ultimately be harmful. I mean, ultimately, because life is meant to be using the best good at the most times and the lesser good at lesser times. You know, it's like, for example, I am the victim of the sin of choosing the lesser good. I am diabetic. Okay? Why am I diabetic? Well, it's part of it runs in my family. But the other part is I ate too much sugar. Now, is eating sugar when I was young, is that a bad thing in and of itself? No. But you put it with a lot of lesser goods, which is balanced diet, and it turns into something that is not so good. Diabetic. Okay? So an accumulation of lesser goods can lead you into a screwed up life. Or at least, you know, diabetes or something else. Okay? So the very first thing that Socrates would tell you is to examine life. And the question is, well, then how do you do that? Well, ultimately, you can't examine life all by yourself. You can't, and this is something that Americans, you know, I love our country. I really do. I love our country. What is it that Winston Churchill once said? Democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others. And he's right. But just because something is willed by the greatest number of people doesn't mean that the greatest number of people is correct. It does not follow. How do you determine what is the best course of action in any given situation? And the way you do it is by studying a couple of things. One is the tradition. Now, lots of people don't like the word tradition. But the word tradition, and I'm not talking about little traditions, you know, like we always buy a white cake for our birthday, or we always buy chocolate for this. Now, those are tiny little. I'm talking about tradition as interpreted as the accumulated wisdom of humankind. We Americans get very, you know, I'm going to use a stronger word. We get very stupid when it comes to our individualism. It's, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to make my own decisions. I don't need anybody to tell me. And I'm always thinking, well, congratulations. You get your own stupidity and you get to keep it. Okay? Why? Because tradition, with a big T, is the accumulated wisdom of humankind. Now, granted, you don't want to look at the little things, because that changes from age to age. But there is something called the accumulated wisdom of humankind. And the accumulated wisdom of humankind, G.K. Chesterton, who's one of the great Catholic thinkers of the 19th century and early 20th, he said, tradition is the greatest form of democracy. And you know why? Because it gives a vote even to the dead. If you think about what tradition is, it is what has been handed on to humankind by people who have lived and died for hundreds of years. They have cast their vote on what's important. We Americans don't like tradition. We like to break with tradition because we're always looking at the little t's instead of the big tradition, the wisdom of humankind. There's an image a good friend of mine always uses. He says, it's like a mom watching her son graduate from West Point, and they're marching, all of them are marching in front of her. And her son is the last man in a corner of the marching, and he is totally out of step with the rest of the unit. And she pokes you next, and she says, look, see that guy that's out of step? He's the only one who's doing it right. That's what we're like, okay? We're so compelled and convinced that we are the ones that are doing it right. That's called the arrogance of the living. The arrogance of the living, okay? So, what is it that you do first? The first thing is you approach the question of examining life with a certain amount of humility. Humility meaning you know you don't have all the answers. You are seeking the truth with a sincere heart. And you go looking and you ask around, where's the best wisdom? And people begin to tell you the best wisdom of humankind. And you begin to find the best books and the best literature and the best advice. And then when you read that, you compare it to your experience. Is what the tradition has said, does it ring true in my life? Does it ring true? And then, after you compare both the tradition and the wisdom of humankind to your own, and you ask maybe some of your closest friends or advisors, am I thinking through this correctly, the people you most trust, then you can come to a better decision. And then you test it out. Does this fit with the structure of what I'm dealing with? And is this the best answer? And that's how you live an examined life. Now, what does that require? And I'll end it up with this way. It requires time for thinking. It requires time away from constant noise and activity. Some of us are addicted. Some of us are so addicted to noise that we can't stand to be alone and that we can't stand to think deeply. We're always having to move, and we have become addicted to the pool break. And if you're one of those, you need to begin to get used to spending, do it slowly, but spend maybe 10, 15 minutes by yourself thinking with no music. Maybe open the Bible, maybe open another book, something that makes you think, something that makes you examine your life. That's what this is all about. It's about making choices that are really worthwhile. It really is worship. Worship is not something you only do here. Worship is the style of life that you live in. Are you doing your best to making sure that that which is worthwhile is in its proper order? Because if it isn't, I'm not saying you're going to be condemned or anything like that, but you're going to get to the end of your life and you're going to look back on your life and you're going to look back and say, what the heck was that all about? What was the point here? You know, in Don Quixote, the play by Cervantes, has a scene where he's holding men who are dying, and he says, I looked into their eyes, and their eyes were asking the question, why, before they died. And then he says, I don't think they were asking why they were dying. I think they were asking why they had lived. When life itself seems mad, who knows where madness lies? Perhaps too much practicality is madness. Perhaps too much being involved in society is madness. And then he says, and maddest of all is to live life as it is rather than how it ought to be. And living life how it ought to be is the result of an examined life. That's what Mary was doing. That was why Jesus said, Martha, you are anxious and upset about things that are not, I'm going to change the words, things that are not worthwhile. Your worship is out of whack. You need to, Mary has chosen the better part, reorder what is worthwhile in your life. Because if you don't, you end up living a kind of a chaotic, reactive life. Okay? And so I think that gospel says a lot to us, and especially us Americans. Okay? And Americans, I'm talking about all of us who are living here, whether you're an immigrant or not. You're living here. You live in a society that constantly encourages you in constant activity and listening to, you know, messages that keep you moving. Get away on a daily basis. Read. Think. Go for a walk. Think about your life. Examine your worship. Are you putting things in the list that they are important? That is Martha and Mary. And Jesus, when he said, Mary has chosen the better part, and she shall not be deprived of it. Thank you for listening.